Good morning, and you're very welcome. As we continue in our study in Philippians, we just started a week ago, and this morning we'll be looking at chapter 1, verses 12 to 18, first part of 18. Now, many years ago, when I was going to Brazil every year to build churches, I was leading a team made up of people from a church in Florida, a church in South Carolina, and a couple of guys with me from the church in Colorado. The plan was for the whole team to travel from Sao Paulo to Miami, and then everyone goes their separate ways there. Due to the airline dissolving while we were there, we were stuck in Sao Paulo for 24 hours, while our alternate paths back to the U.S. were figured out. Now, the people in Florida were able to leave that day, later that day, on another airline. The South Carolina people and my team from Colorado had to wait until the next day. So what do? We had a whole day ahead of us with nothing to do. Now, the three of us from Colorado hired a car. And I called the man who had been our interpreter during the week. His name's Murillo. He agreed to drive us around Sao Paulo, giving us a private tour of the city. So we drove about 200 kilometers without ever leaving the city. We visited two museums and two or three churches, plus a beautiful botanical garden. His mother made dinner for us, and we had a home-cooked meal. Our circumstances changed, and we could have complained about it and sat around and been bored at the hotel, or we could make good use of the extra time given to us. So we enjoyed our extra day, and we have good memories to look back on in what seemed to be an inconvenient situation. And because of that day, we were encouraged by a fellow brother in Christ, Murillo, and his mother, and I hope that we were able to encourage them as well. Now, Paul is in prison, as you know, and most people would say that that was an inconvenient situation for him. I think that we would all think that being in prison was an inconvenient situation. He would not be able to preach the gospel, disciple new believers, or plant a church, right? Wrong. Paul took what was given to him, and he used the time in prison to advance the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is what we're going to look at today. Christ was always central in Paul's mind. No matter where he was, no matter what he was doing, or who he was with, Christ was the forefront of everything. That's kind of the big idea for this section. No matter the situation in life, Christ must be first in our hearts and minds in all that we do. And as we look at these few verses, we will see how Paul coped with his circumstances. First, no matter his circumstances, he took the opportunity to advance the gospel. And second, whether people considered him a rival or a friend in gospel ministry, he did not care, as long as the gospel of Jesus was being proclaimed. So let me read these few verses from Philippians chapter 1, verses 12 to 18. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Now some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. Now, as I mentioned before, the whole team had a roadblock to deal with in getting home. I mean, we have roadblocks in life, right? Everyone got home, but not by the route that they expected. We could have complained about the inconvenience and stay in the hotel, or we could make better use of our time, and that's what we did. I will most likely never go back to Brazil or go to see those museums and churches, and I doubt that I'll see my friend Murillo again until we're in heaven. We took advantage of the extra time given to us. And that's what Paul did with his time in prison. Do we stop because of the roadblocks and the challenges ahead, or do we accept that and take those new opportunities? Well, first, Paul wanted the church, the brothers, to know that he is not stressed with his current situation. Being in prison isn't a problem for him. Quite the contrary. What has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. Remember, Paul has been in prison before, a few times. What did he and Silas do in the prison in Philippi? They sang worship songs at midnight. They preached to and encouraged the other prisoners. They rescued the jailer when he was prepared to fall on his sword after the earthquake. Paul was used to roadblocks and change of directions in ministry. Being in prison in Rome was not a problem. Being surrounded by prison guards was not a problem. Now think about it. We know from historical research that the Romans would change the guards about every 4 hours. And so Paul would be guarded by at least two guards, and every 4 hours those guards were changed. So if it's just two guards, then that's 12 guards per day. 12 guys that Paul would share the gospel with. And we know that he did, because Paul tells us in verse 13 that the gospel became known throughout the whole imperial guard. Now, this group of soldiers, the Praetorium or the Imperial Guard, it was roughly about 6,000 men. And Paul would have met, you know, many of them, maybe not all of them. That's a lot of guys to go through, but many of them. The soldiers took the gospel message back to the barracks. Can you imagine the soldiers going back and saying, did you hear what Paul was saying? Some would think he was kind of loopy, kind of crazy, but others would take it to heart. And they would take the gospel of Jesus Christ back, and they would tell others. Many of these men would become Christians. And we don't know the number, nor do we know the gospel witness that they had in their families and communities, but we do know that they had it, that the gospel spread through the soldiers. And not only the soldiers, but all the other non-military personnel, and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. You know, because Paul wrote at the end of this letter, in chapter 4, verse 22, all the saints greet you, meaning all the saints, all the believers, all the Christians in Rome, especially those of Caesar's household. So there were people within Caesar's household. I mean, Paul was surrounded by people within Caesar's household, and he took the opportunity to share the gospel with them. So, the soldiers and Caesar's household. Most likely a church was formed at the headquarters of paganism. Emperor worship was one of the biggest cults in Rome and throughout the empire. And Paul was a Trojan horse for the gospel of Jesus Christ, entering into the very heart of this Gentile pagan world, just as Jesus had ordained him to do. What men intend for evil, God sovereignly intends for good. Hardships in life are opportunities for proclaiming Jesus. And Paul took those opportunities. But not only did Paul redeem the time in prison or to share the gospel, with others, but his attitude helped the local believers to become more confident in their faith. They became bolder in sharing the gospel in Rome. And Paul said in verse 14 that most of the brothers became more confident to proclaim Christ without fear. Now this boldness was due to Christ working in them. Remember what Paul said a few verses earlier in verse 6, "He who began a good work in you will bring it to completion." He will be faithful to bring it to completion. He, meaning Christ, began a good work in the new believers in Rome. And Christ is the one who helped them overcome their fears. Jesus will do the same for the church in Philippi. And that was the encouragement that Paul was sending to the church in Philippi. Look, this is what's happening here. And that can happen there too with you. They can be just as bold in their faith as the believers in the household of Caesar. And remember, Rome was a pagan city. Not only the cult of emperor worship, but dozens of other major cults. So preaching Jesus was dangerous in Rome. I mean, one theologian and church historian said, this probably reflects the historical situation in Rome in the early 60s, when Nero's madness was peaking and the church there had begun to fall under suspicion. So fearless witness on the part of Paul had ignited passion for fearless witnessing in the hearts of others. This has often been the case in the history of the church. When the threat increases, the Lord stirs up the hearts of his people so that the gospel will advance boldly for the Lord. In February 1956, it'll be 69 years ago this next month, In Life magazine was a report and the photos of the missionaries killed by the Aki Indians in Ecuador. Jim Elliott, Ed McCulley, Roger Udarian, Pete Fleming, and Nate Saint were martyred on the 8th of January, 1956. Did that stop the families from continuing to take the gospel to those tribes? No, it opened doors. Elizabeth Elliot, who's pictured there with her husband Jim, Elizabeth and her children and other people, other members related to the martyred missionaries, continued to reach these seemingly impossible to reach people for Christ. You can read their stories of the wondrous work God did through them. But the point I'm making with this is that God took their fear and he gave them a courage. In times of trial and spiritual roadblocks, God has a plan that is so much greater than our own. And not everyone was happy that Paul was there, that Paul was in Rome. Paul refers to the motives that the believers had for preaching. I mean, Paul redeemed his time there, and he took advantage of the opportunities, but then he also heard about these motives for other believers who were preaching. Amazingly, some of the Christians proclaimed the gospel with selfish motives. Look what Paul had to say in verses 15 to 18. Now, when I was a kid, we always had a large vegetable garden. I think I've talked about that before. You know, corn, green beans, beetroot, sweet potatoes, peas, onions, carrots, lettuce, whatever else Dad wanted to plant. My job was to pull the weeds and the rocks out of the garden. My attitude was not always the best. I would do the work, but my motive was not always positive. Most of the time, I was grumbling and complaining about how boring it was, how hot it was, how tired I was, and how long it was taking. There was no joy for me, and my attitude was probably a big irritation to my parents. If I had not complained, but was diligent in my work, I probably could have done the job in half the time and made life more pleasant for all of us. Despite my motives and attitude, the vegetables still grew. Paul has received word concerning the local believers in and around Rome that they have been proclaiming the gospel, but with different motives. He knows that some of the people do not like him, and they view him as a rival. They are preaching about Jesus, but they are saying negative things about Paul. The other people are preaching Jesus, and they view Paul as a friend and a mentor. They are both doing the work of the ministry. Both of these grumblers and those are friends with Paul, but have different motives. They're preaching the gospel, but with different motives. What distinguishes them is not the gospel. That's the one thing that's common. But their motives and attitudes towards Paul is what's the difference. One group resents Paul, while the other group admires and is thankful for Paul. Let's take a look at the differences. What about the ones with the wrong motives? Will they preach with an attitude of envy and rivalry? They are envious of Paul's successes. They feel they are in competition with Paul. That is human pride. It is easy to look at another church and say, I wish we had a building like theirs. They are so lucky to have a church building in the middle of town. If we had that building, we could do a lot more ministry for Jesus. And it is one thing to wish for something. And yes, I do wish we had our own building. But so do most of the churches in Ireland. Of the 11 Baptist churches in the Cork Kerry Project, only two churches have their own building, Cork Baptist and Westside Baptist in Bandon. I mean, it's human nature to look at another situation and be envious of what they have. What we should be doing is being thankful for what they have and what we have, and praying for their ministry and their outreach to their community, and praying for our ministry, thanking God for the work that they are doing and praying for them as they reach out to their community. Paul goes on to say that they proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. Paul, pure motives in ministry should be a desire to see people accept the gospel and to see Christ exalted. Those are the two things in ministry. For people to accept the gospel and for Christ to be exalted. But this crowd wanted to see themselves exalted and for their own reputation to grow at the expense of Paul's ministry. Now we must be careful in how we look at other churches and how they minister to the community. We must be thankful for them and pray for them and not be negative towards them and cause people to turn away. I mean, if they're preaching the gospel, then we should be thankful for that. The other group that Paul mentioned was those that proclaim Christ from goodwill, out of love, knowing that I am put here, that he was appointed for the defense of the gospel. They proclaim Christ, and they think of Paul as a friend, not a rival. They preach out of love, love for Paul, love for God, love for Christ, love for seeing people saved, love for their church, and seeing people growing in their faith. They support Paul. They know that Paul is doing what Jesus called him to do, to proclaim the gospel to the Gentiles. So while he's preaching the gospel on the inside, within his prison situation, they were preaching on the outside. Now, what was Paul's attitude throughout this divisive situation? He rejoiced. He rejoiced that Christ was being proclaimed. Now, if Christ was not being proclaimed, that would be a different story. This would be quite a different letter. And he would be dealing with those false teaching. But Christ was being proclaimed. That wasn't a problem. What he's sharing is the motives that people had. See, he refused to dwell on the negatives. And he was not going to bring the focus onto himself. Because if he did, then Christ would not be the focus, but his own ministry would be the focus, and then Paul then would just fall into their line of thinking. No, Paul stayed focused on Christ. Whatever their motives for preaching were, at least they were preaching Christ. God will deal with them and their motives. That'll be something the Holy Spirit will work on their heart. But Paul rejoiced that the gospel was proclaimed. To make it a little simpler, I just put together this comparison between the two types of preachers. I guess we would just say good preachers and bad preachers. But here's the list. Some of them are common, and then you can see the difference. Boldness through Paul's imprisonment. Both of them did that. They were both bold to preach. They preached Christ. But the difference is good preachers did it out of goodwill, because of goodwill, and out of love. The bad preachers, because of envy and rivalry, and out of selfish ambition, they weren't sincere about their preaching with their motives. Good preachers know that Christ, that Paul was appointed, and they had true motives in their preaching, while the bad preachers, they thought that they could cause him distress, and they were preaching with false motives. But no matter whether it's true or false, out of love or out of selfish ambition, Paul rejoices that the gospel is being preached. That's the important thing here to remember. I mean, I hope that this simple comparison helps to distinguish between the two and how Paul felt about both. The main idea is to see how God is working when he steers us into a different direction. When roadblocks in life and ministry happen, what is God going to do in us and through us? And this passage is about how we choose to view our circumstances, especially those times that are physically or emotionally unpleasant. We must learn to view every negative circumstance in life not as an obstacle, not as this block in the road, but as an opportunity for the gospel of Jesus to be advanced. Many years ago, a Christian singer, Steve Camp, had finished a concert and he was walking to his car and he was mugged in the car park, beaten and robbed. When he got home, he called his friend Keith Green, another Christian musician, and told Keith all about it, and Keith asked him if he shared the gospel with his attackers. He said, "No, I didn't." And he hung up on Keith, muttering about how insensitive his friend was, and he called his mother. And after telling her about the incident, she asked him if he shared the gospel with his attackers. He said, "Were you just talking to Keith?" Keith and the mom saw that as an opportunity to share the gospel. Steve did not. As believers, we do need to choose how we view our situations in life. One theologian said, when difficult, even life-threatening circumstances face us, we should take Paul as our example and look for how God might be working in such circumstances to advance the gospel, either in our own lives or in the lives of others. Well, what does this all mean for us today? What do we do with the change of circumstances or deviations in life, no matter how big or small that they may be? What do we do? We simply look at the opportunities God has given us. Maybe we need, maybe we are delayed in a flight. We may have conversations with people that we would never have met. Or more drastic situations when there is conflict, such as the war in Ukraine, more than 30 new churches have been planted during the time of conflict. I mean, look at here's just a list of things and roadblocks in life from the Bible and since then. I mean, in Acts 8, after the martyrdom of Stephen, the persecution against the church was growing in Jerusalem, and the believers were dispersed to many areas in the Middle East. And that persecution caused the gospel of Christ to advance to outside of Jerusalem. In Acts 16, Paul's diverted to Philippi and into Europe. The more Paul was persecuted, the more he preached. He took every opportunity as a chance to advance the gospel. Religious persecution in England and throughout Europe led to the migration of believers to North America in the 1600s, 1700s. New churches were planted throughout North America where there had never been a church. The underground churches in China and throughout Asia are flourishing because of the persecution there. There are more than 100 million Christians in China. And of course, as I mentioned, the new churches planted in Ukraine during the war. When you'd think that churches would be closing, new churches have opened, and the churches have grown. You know, Paul shows us that no matter the circumstance or the motive, he set aside his own aspirations for the sake of the gospel. He was gospel-centered. Everything he did was focused on Christ. And that is what we can take from Paul. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed. And in this I rejoice. Yes, I will rejoice. Don Carson, another theologian and pastor, said this about Paul. Paul's example is impressive and clear. Put the advance of the gospel at the center of your aspirations. Our own comfort, our bruised feelings, our reputations, our misunderstood motives, all of these are insignificant in comparison with the advance and splendor of the gospel. As Christians, we are called upon to put the advance of the gospel at the very center of our lives. So wherever you are this week, whatever happens, if you're delayed or facing a roadblock in life, whatever that may be, look for the opportunities that God has given you. What new person are you now in contact with that you never knew before? What new situation in life brings new people for you to interact with and possibly share the love of Christ with? No matter what happens, as long as Christ is proclaimed, we can rejoice. Let's pray.